are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name's Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hopefully your week got off to a great start on Monday, and hopefully you're looking forward to talking a little bit about Wolves Suns today. Unfortunately, it was yet another loss for the Wolves, their fifth in a row. We're going to break that down for the first portion of the show, what the major takeaways are. We'll look at our studs and duds from the game, who actually played well for the Wolves and who didn't. It was a pretty, there were basically three guys that were good, and then everybody else really wasn't. So we'll talk through that. And then we'll move on to take a high view at the next few games and what's next for the Wolves as they try and avoid an all-out spiral here at the early stages of December. So setting the stage for Monday's game in Phoenix, the Wolves, of course, had their hearts broken last Wednesday in Dallas in a very winnable game. They held Luka Doncic in check, ended up losing a close game to one of the league's best teams thus far this season. And that was a tough pill to swallow at the start of a four-game road trip. And then on Friday night in Oklahoma City, after already having lost a couple of games in a row, the home game last Monday, the road game in Dallas, the Wolves overcame a 10-point deficit with just 4 minutes to play in the game. And, of course, one were ahead by two with Cat at the free throw line and 1.1 seconds left. And the whole delayed game debacle, the missed free throw, then the accidental made free throw, the crazy full-court pass to Dennis Schroeder, the buzzer beater, and then a horrible overtime period. Somehow the Wolves lost by 12 in an overtime game. So that's how the Wolves were, I guess, set up for the game in LA on Sunday. And then the Wolves gave up what seemed like 1,000 transition points to Anthony Davis and LeBron James and the Lakers on Sunday in LA, hung in the game for most of it until late, and then the Lakers pulled away. The Wolves on Monday were still really banged up. All questionable players, or all players that were listed as questionable on the injury reports on both Sunday and Monday, ended up playing in the game, including Andrew Wiggins with his sprained thumb. Remember, he didn't play on Friday in OKC. It was the only game he missed with that injury, but he was questionable Sunday and Monday. And then Jeff Teague as well was on the injury report with an ankle injury. He tweaked it. Remember, he's always had some ankle problems, some pretty severe ones that cropped up last year, and he rolled it in Oklahoma City on Friday. He was questionable on Sunday and Monday, but played in both games, came off the bench. Of course, he started Friday in OKC when Wiggins was out and had a huge game, his biggest scoring game in a while, back on Friday, but was a little bit more pedestrian on Sunday in LA. And we'll talk about his overall performance on Monday, but he bounced back a little bit. Still, the Wolves are pretty banged up compared to some of the other teams that they've been facing. The Suns actually got back a couple of guys that they didn't have the first time the Wolves played the Suns. You'll remember the Suns actually beat the Wolves 100-98 in Minnesota a couple of weeks ago. Sans Ricky Rubio and sans Aaron Baines. Rubio's been back for about a week now. Aaron Baines played one game after he'd been out with a hip issue, came back, and then he ended up with a calf injury. Came back and came off the bench in this game and played not a ton of minutes, but also was very solid for the Suns. And so both Rubio and Baines were a big reason why Phoenix was able to ultimately pull away in this one. The biggest issues for the Wolves, basically from start to finish, transition defense was once again a problem. Not quite to the tune of what the Lakers are able to do to the Wolves, but there were a few buckets early. The first portion of the first quarter was exactly like the game in LA in terms of pace, just up and down constantly, both teams scoring. And of course, the Wolves were able to answer back and keep things close, which is huge. But the number of easy buckets that the Suns were able to get in transition was pretty unconscionable, really. I don't know how the Wolves are struggling so much with transition defense after makes. And that's something that surely Ryan Saunders and defensive coordinator David Vanterpool are going to address. Overall, defensively, this Wolves team was fairly underrated for the first, 15 or so games of the season. They were actually ranked really middle of the pack all year in defensive rating. They were hovering in that 14 to 17 range in terms of their league ranking for defensive rating, but they've been steadily sliding. And they were, I think, at 20th or 21st headed into the game in Phoenix on Monday. And that's only going to fall further. And transition defense is the primary reason. They still have solid wing defenders, and Towns has been doing a good job in the paint, but they're struggling to contain. They continue to struggle to contain lead guards on opposing teams, really any ball handler that has some dynamic scoring punch. And in this game, they were really picked apart by Ricky Rubio, who does not have scoring punch, but is a fantastic passer. He was able to break down the Wolves defense at will and ended up with 14 assists. It was his third straight game with 13 or more assists. And he's finally on a team that he's surrounded by shooters and he's being allowed to handle the ball consistently. In Minnesota, Rubio didn't have shooters around him, and his best seasons were with Kevin Love when they could just run pick and rolls constantly, and Love was just dynamic and extremely dangerous. In Utah, he didn't end up handling the ball that much because Donovan Mitchell turned out to be a superstar from day one in Utah, and so Rubio didn't even handle the ball on the majority of possessions and wasn't used to his full capabilities in that offense. In Phoenix, he's basically splitting ball handling duties with Devin Booker, although he's handling the ball more than Booker. And even though Booker and Mitchell have some similarities, Booker is much more comfortable being a spot shooter, spot up shooter and catching and shooting. And he's a better cutter than Donovan Mitchell. Mitchell would prefer to have the ball in his hands in isolation or handling in the pick and roll himself, whereas Booker ran the offense for the Suns last couple of years, but is better as an off-ball guy who can get the ball in spots that are advantageous to score. And the duo of Booker and Rubio is exactly the sort of pair that would give the Wolves fits, because the Wolves struggle so much to contain lead guards that handle the ball and can get into the paint and either score or distribute. And that's exactly what happened in this game. You look at how the numbers wound up. Rubio had, as I mentioned, 14 assists. He also had 16 points, took him 16 shots to do it. He was blocked a number of times in the lane, missed a couple layups. It looked, for the most part, the scoring by Rubio looked a lot like what Wolves fans are used to seeing from several years ago. But the 14 assists and only one turnover was fantastic. Booker had 26 points, took him 20 shots to get there, but he also had 7 assists, 3 turnovers. And then Kelly Oubre was kind of the wild card in this one. He's been very good this year. Had 24 points and 4 rebounds, 8 of 15 shooting, and really came on late as the Suns were starting to pull away. So despite having solid perimeter defenders, the Wolves once again struggled to contain dynamic perimeter players. And that's something that they're going to have to figure out moving forward. The other issues in this game, rebounding was a problem. You look at the final box score, and the Wolves did out-rebound the Suns, 45-42 for the game. But they were trailing in that category for much of the game, and there was a stretch in the third quarter where it felt like the Suns got at least half of their 12 offensive rebounds on the night and were just scoring every time they got a rebound. The Wolves had a couple of team rebounds that they knocked off each other's hands out of bounds. There were some unforced errors that led to some second chance points. The Wolves ended up with uncharacteristically 16 turnovers in this game, and the Suns only had 9. So rebounding and turnovers kind of went hand in hand in giving the Suns extra opportunities to bury the Wolves. And as Phoenix was starting to pull away, they led by 8 in the third quarter. The Wolves got it back to 2 or 3, and then Phoenix pushed it back to 9 before the end of the quarter. And at that point, Phoenix just continued to build on it, and the Wolves couldn't catch up. And a lot of that was due to the rebounding and the turnovers. Shooting, again, was an issue for the Wolves. So, I mean, stop me if you've heard this before. Transition defense, rebounding, and shooting were the biggest three issues once again. Overall, again, the half-court defense wasn't terrible in this game, and the overall offense and the action and the passing for the Wolves wasn't bad either, and there certainly still is a lot there. But somehow they only managed to shoot 22 threes, which is really uncharacteristic for the Wolves on the season. And to make matters worse, if they shoot 22 threes efficiently, then not a huge deal. But the Wolves, instead of those 22 threes, only made 6, which is just over 27%. This is a team that shoots on average 38.4 threes a game. So they shot, just a little over 2/3 as many threes as they typically would shoot. And on the season, they're 33%. Again, for this game, they shot 27%. Biggest defenders, Wiggins was 1-for-5. Robert Covington was 0-for-4. Nobody else had a terrible shooting night. Towns was 2-for-4. But the Wolves simply can't have a night where Karl Anthony Towns only attempts 4 3-pointers. The Suns did a good job of getting him out of the spots the Wolves wanted him in. And the Wolves, once again, weren't quite as aggressive as they should have been in getting him to specific spots on the floor. All right, next up, we're going to talk studs and duds about each Timberwolves individual player and who falls into either one of those categories. First, I wanted to mention Spotify Wrapped. If you're a Spotify listener, use Spotify Wrapped to show us your top Locked On podcasts for the year. Take a screenshot and tag us on Twitter at Locked On Live and at Locked On T-Wolves, and we will share and retweet. The Twitter accounts to take a screenshot and tag us in are at Locked On Live and at Locked On T-Wolves, and we'll share and retweet your posts. All right, let's talk studs and duds from the game. The Timberwolves had, you know, their one clear leader in terms of the box score, and I guess really all-around play in this game was Karl Anthony Towns. The box score maybe inflates a little bit how well he played. He ended up with 33 points, and he shot 12 of 18 from the floor. Pretty much dominated inside when he needed to. Got Frank Kaminsky in early foul trouble. Kaminsky ended up only playing 10 minutes after starting the game. He had 3 fouls early in the first half, picked up a 4th early in the third quarter, and I don't think he saw the court again. So Towns had 33 and 18 shots, but again, as I mentioned previously, he only shot 2 of 4 from beyond the arc. He was 7 of 9 from the free throw line, had 15 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 blocks, and just 2 turnovers. Towns didn't have the ball in his hands in this one as much as the Wolves would have liked, and the Suns did a good job at doubling him on the catch, and yet he was still able to split double teams in a couple of instances. He finished through contact, had a couple of and-one opportunities, but the Wolves just didn't do a good enough job of getting him the ball consistently. 18 shots, shot attempts still isn't enough for Towns, especially when he's playing as efficiently as he was on Monday night. So a good game from Towns. Wasn't quite enough, and he was okay on defense too. I mean, the Aaron Baines played 15 minutes, had 12 points. Dario Saric had basically his best game of the season at 20 points, 9 rebounds, 7-11 shooting, and Kaminsky didn't do much. So it wasn't the big men for the Suns that hurt the Wolves. It was the aforementioned duo of Booker and Kelly Oubre primarily. And Ricky Rubio, actually, that hurt the Wolves in this one. So Towns had a solid all-around game. Tough to complain too much about it. I think there's certainly some frustration setting in, and that's to be expected with the 5-game losing streak. But overall, Towns did a good job fighting through it and was the best player on the floor for the Wolves pretty clearly in this one. Andrew Wiggins had a solid game, was better than he was in L.A. on Sunday. He had 23 points on 8 of 18 shooting, was only 1 of 5 from beyond the arc. 6 of 7 at the free throw line, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, couple blocks. Defensively, you know, he didn't contribute much. The Wolves had Jarrett Culver open the game guarding Ricky Rubio. Culver got into foul trouble, ended up with 5 fouls in 15 minutes. Okogie played 29 minutes, was largely guarding Devin Booker. And, you know, Wiggins was kind of floating between Oubre and Booker and didn't do a great job defensively. So I think he still falls into the studs category because we're a little bit grading on a curve here in terms of most of the Wolves didn't play well at all. And so we'll give Wiggins the nod for that because it wasn't his fault. The Wolves defense collapsed. He just wasn't, you know, he didn't really contribute positively to that either. Jeff Teague is really the only other Wolf that you could make the argument had a game that could be classified in the studs category. He had 16 points on 6 of 14 shooting. He was 3 of 4 from the free throw line. He did only have 4 assists in his 28 minutes to 3 turnovers. And there were a couple of stretches where he had just awful injury passes again, and which continues to plague him. But Teague was solid on the offensive end of the floor overall and contributed a little bit of a scoring punch when nobody else on the Wolves finished in double figures. They had Towns with 33 points, Wiggins with 23, and Teague with 16 in the 28 minutes, and nobody else on the team scored more than 8. So Teague's bench scoring has been important during these last few games, but the Wolves need to figure out that rotation with Teague and Napier together on the court because that's not working. I don't have the numbers in front of me, and I'll try and pull those for a future episode, but it's not working quite clearly. That's what the eye test tells me for the 10 to 15 minutes a game that those guys are on the floor together. It's been a big part of this 5-game losing streak, as the defense has been bad and the offense has been disjointed to be at best. On the duds side of the ledger, the Wolves had quite a few guys that would qualify for that. Robert Covington scored just 4 points. Of course, he started at the four. He played 26 minutes, was 0-4 beyond the arc, only had 2 rebounds, didn't have any defensive stats, steals, blocks, was part of that wing defense that kind of collapsed in this game. There really wasn't anything positive to say about Roko's game. He started the Sunday's game in the Lakers terribly as well and came on strong in the second half. But it looks like that hot shooting streak might be over. The Wolves need more from Covington, quite frankly. And we've been giving him the benefit of the doubt early in the season, mostly due to his recovery from knee surgery last year, and maybe that's still what's going on. But the Wolves can't have a starting power forward that pulls down 2 rebounds. In fact, as a team, nobody had more than 6 rebounds except for Towns. Culver had 6 in just 15 minutes, and Kata Bates-Diop had 5 in 23 minutes. And nobody else was really showed up to rebound. The Wolves just simply can't have an 0-for-4 night and 2 rebounds only from Robert Covington if they're going to be a competitive team this year. And I'm sure he knows that. So I guess you could say the power forward position as a whole, because Kata Bates-Diop was his backup in this game. He didn't score until garbage time. He had just 2 points on the night, 5 rebounds. Excuse me. He also only he was 1-of-4 shooting. He didn't attempt a 3-pointer. It's a guy who's shooting like 75% from the corners, and he wasn't able to squeeze the trigger at all from beyond the arc in this game. He was only a -1, Bates-Diop was, which was the best mark of anybody that played beyond garbage time. Which is crazy. Well, I guess Jordan Bell was even, but he only played 5 first-half minutes. Overall, his stint was okay defensively for the Wolves, but he didn't contribute anything on offense. It's not entirely his fault, but I guess all that to say, the power forwards for the Wolves in this game scored 6 points on 2-of-9 shooting and combined for 7 rebounds. That's not going to get it done next to Karl Anthony Towns. And no wonder Towns had to carry the load to the tune of 33-15 in this game. So keep an eye on what the Wolves do in that spot moving forward. It probably only Covington struggles and Bates-Diop overall playing better is probably only going to grease the wheels for a potential trade at some point in the future. If the Wolves continue to kind of spiral downwards, there's no reason that the Wolves should be keeping Covington as good as he is. And even at his contract, he's had enough of these duds this year that it's just, they could probably get more value for him in a trade and give some minutes to Bates-Diop as they try and sort out what the rest of this team is going to look like. So don't be surprised. And that's something we'll cover more as we get closer to trade season. December 15th and that deadline, or I guess the date where players that were acquired in the offseason are able to be traded, that's coming up this week. And so that'll spur some trade talk around the NBA blogosphere here very soon. The other dud that I'll mention in this game, Jarrett Culver played okay when he was on the court, but he did have 3 turnovers and 5 personal fouls in just 15 minutes, but he had 6.6 rebounds. It just wasn't one of the best games we've seen from Culver, as he couldn't stay on the court. And then Shabazz Napier had 7 points in 17 minutes on 5 shots, but he also had 5 turnovers to only 2 assists and was a -11 on the game, which is hard to do in just 17 minutes. So not a good game for him either. And the rest of the Wolves bench was just fairly quiet in this one. Josh Okogie didn't do much. He had 8 points. Gorgui Dieng only played 12 minutes. Jordan Bell had a strong first half stint, but for some reason only played the 5 minutes in the game. It was unclear why he didn't get back on the court in the second half at all. So really, only Towns really came to play in this one. Wiggins and Teague had okay games, and everybody else was just flatly bad. And the Wolves can't have these stinkers and rely on Towns to carry them and expect to win on the road in a back-to-back especially. So disappointing all-around effort from the Wolves, to be sure. All right, next up, we're going to talk about what's on the horizon for the Wolves and if they can pull out of this tailspin before it's too late in terms of their playoff hopes. Taking a step back and looking at the Western Conference as a whole, the Timberwolves entered the game against the Suns on Monday, tied for the 8th seed with Phoenix, in the West. Of course, they were behind in the tiebreaker, having lost to them a couple weeks ago, and are now 0-2 against Phoenix. The Wolves have plummeted with this five-game losing streak. They're now tied for ninth in the West with Sacramento, who's won a couple in a row and is playing better of late, and won on Nemanja Bjelica buzzer beater over Washington after, I think they won in Dallas, or excuse me, over Houston after winning in Dallas the other night. So a couple nice wins for Sacramento. The Wolves are tied with them and a game behind Phoenix and Oklahoma City, who are tied for the 7-8 seeds. The Wolves are 0-1 against the Thunder and 0-2 against the Suns now, and tiebreakers are going to be a factor moving forward. The Wolves are only a game ahead of San Antonio, a game and a half ahead of Portland, and somehow only three games ahead of Memphis, who they've already lost to twice. So it's not like, even though the Wolves are in the playoff picture until really today, it's not like there's a ton of cushion between the middle and the bottom of the West anymore. There's just a lot of teams that are hovering three, four, or five games back. And really the only teams that have been completely hopeless this year are New Orleans and Golden State. And I guess you could throw Memphis when they're not playing the Timberwolves in that category, as Memphis is, 5-16 against everybody else, but 2-0 against the Wolves. So the Wolves can't afford a straight tailspin at this point. They really need to begin to stabilize things. And they've got a lot of Western Conference games. Remember, they opened the year with like six or seven East games against Eastern Conference in a row. It was six of them, actually. They went 4-2, losing to Philadelphia and Milwaukee and beating everybody else they played from the West or from the East. And then since then, the Wolves haven't had that many games against the Western Conference. Since that opening stretch of six games, they've beaten Detroit. They lost to Washington, which was obviously a bad loss. They beat Atlanta. And that's it. So they're 2-1 against the East since that opening six game stretch. And they've got a few more games coming up here after one more long stretch of Western Conference games. So looking ahead, things don't get easier for a little while. The Wolves have Utah at home on Wednesday. Utah's not playing as well of late, and the Wolves have split two games against them so far, but that's, of course, never an easy game. And then the Wolves host the Clippers. First time they're playing the LA Clippers this year. Of course, the Clippers are the class of the conference right now, and they will face them, the class of the conference along with the other team from LA. They'll face them on Friday night. That was a game that was originally a 7 o'clock game but got moved to 8:30 to be on ESPN. They flexed out the Warriors and somebody that no longer will be on ESPN, but the Wolves will be, and they'll be wearing their new City Edition uniforms with the MSP across the chest on Friday at 8:30 at home. And then, mercifully, the Wolves get a few days off before hosting New Orleans next Wednesday. They had a long break over Thanksgiving at home, and that, of course, they didn't come out of that very strong. Since their Thanksgiving break is actually since they've lost all five games since then. But hopefully this time around, their break at home will go better, as they'll have, what is that? That's like four straight off days in between home games before hosting New Orleans, who's been the second worst team in the league next to Golden State. So not an easy homestand, but certainly a homestand that they could come out of 2-1 and feel pretty good about, although 1-2 is probably more likely. And then they go on the road at Denver, at Portland, at Golden State, at Sacramento. Denver is the only one of those teams that's a surefire playoff team, but Portland and Sacramento are in a similar tier to the Wolves, as in teams that are below 500 but wanting to make a playoff push. So those games are important. They haven't played. They somehow haven't played Sacramento or Portland at all this year. And so both those games will be important to get off to a good start in tiebreakers against Western Conference opponents. Golden State, of course, is terrible at this point. And the Wolves will be at Golden State on the 23rd. So that entire road trip takes place just prior to and after Christmas. And then as we head into the new year, things get a little bit easier. The Wolves host Cleveland and Brooklyn, two winnable games, although Brooklyn's playing a lot better of late. At Milwaukee's tough, but Golden State at home. And then they kind of do the whole like one-game homestand thing for a while in January. So if they can come out of this homestand 2-1, I think everybody feels good about that. And then this road trip, there's three really winnable games and one really tough one in Denver. So splitting that road trip would be okay, but going 3-1 is certainly possible. But if things spiral, they're going to spiral quickly on this road trip. This last road trip went terribly. They went 0-4. After having won in Atlanta and San Antonio, but their road record is now 7-6. And that's no longer, propping up the fact that they also have a poor home record. So things are going to need to stabilize here at home. If they can go 2-1 and then have a decent road trip, I think everybody can feel okay about things as we turn the calendar to 2020. But we're going to hear a lot of rumblings after December 15th. That trade, I guess, the day when the trade market really opens up, we're going to start to hear some rumors if the Wolves continue their slide in the West. So they're going to need to turn things around in a hurry. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is Locked On Wolves podcast. We'll be back on Wednesday morning to preview the game against the Utah Jazz. We'll also have a guest with us on Wednesday, and we will talk through a couple of other Wolves-related notes before we head towards the rest of the week.